And we're back. Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And we're joined by the bluesologist, Norman Otis Richmond. Are you there, Norman?
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. That's a nice piece of music. How come, what is it about this song that you like or it seems important?
Oh, I like the, I really like the message in the music and the fact that it was produced and written by Kenny Gamble, mm-hmm. who was the, we had a chapter of the Black Music Association here in Toronto. We put together a chapter and we had a chance to meet Mr. Gamble in I think we met him in Miami Miami Beach, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been a big fan of Luqman. He's in the Nation of Islam. His name is Luqman Hag. For my Muslim brothers, I might be mispronouncing it.
But he was known as Kenny Gamble before.
Everybody basically it still calls him Kenny Gamble, but you know he's a.
I see.
He's a big man in Philadelphia. He owns tons of property in Philadelphia. He has a community there, right?
Wow. Now, is he the initiator of this matter of calling for a Black Music Month?
Yes. What happened was Kenny Gamble, Diana Williams, and a guy by the name of I have a senior moment. Another guy out of Cleveland. Mm-hmm. They figured that everybody had the Country Music Month was a big thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Kenny Gamble thought it would be, or they came together and thought it would be a good idea to have a Black Music Association. The Country Music Association, I think, was for their disc jockeys. But Kenny Gamble's idea was to put together the musicians, the producers, the disc jockeys, the whole industry. It was like an industry. The whole industry came together and tried to coordinate everything. So Black people, well, their position was, Black power, Black music is green,
mm-hmm.
and then a lot of people that joined the organization thought that Black power, Black music should be used for the struggle, and some people took the position that Black power should be green. Some people said it should be red, black, and green. It was like a united front type of situation. I'm sorry, Phil. I'm having a lot of problems hearing you.
You haven't heard. Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, so what has happened with the Black Music Association? Is it, what's the status?
It is defunct. There was a lot of
differences.
A lot of differences. We were supposed to have a convention in Africa, and that never took place. For example, I'll give you an example. I met Lloyd Price. Now Lloyd Price was a great singer. I used to work with Don King, and he was a promoter. He was a character. When I say he was out of Louisiana. I met him in at the Black Music Association convention, and he had just spent. He lived in the Democratic Republic of Congo when it was Zaire, and then he spent 10 years in Nigeria.
Mm.
So it was at that particular time they were basically really trying to internationalize the situation, but things broke up.
Geography would be a problem.
Yeah.
If the guy is in Nigeria and he's the principal or one of the principal motivators, unless he's in Motown, it's kind of hard to do that, isn't it?
Oh yeah, some people were fascinated by power, mm-hmm. after Murtala Muhammad, who was a great leader in Nigeria, you know, basically, and Murtala Muhammad was a military man, but he was a military man with a with a consciousness. Most after Murtala Muhammad was assassinated, it was basically neo-colonialists that took over.
You know, it's such,
even if they were.
It's you're raising an opportunity to talk about some really interesting things. I remember there was a woman, black United States senator from Illinois, and she wanted to develop relations, encourage them with Nigeria when the U.S. State Department didn't want to get along with Nigeria. And my memory was she went there to Nigeria, and it became a cause celeb to stop her. And she eventually, her name was Brown, right? Braun? Do you remember that?
Yes.
And there was a leader, I don't know if it's the gentleman you're referring to, but it was a Muslim former general that she was dealing with. But they practically crucified her for being friendly to Nigeria.
Well, Murtala, it might have been Murtala Muhammad because of the airport in Lagos is named after. When you land in Nigeria, you land at Murtala Muhammad International Airport. Mm-hmm. And Murtala Muhammad was a anti-imperialist, very anti-imperialist.
Mm-hmm. So you're working. You'd like to keep this idea alive, right? There must have been artists. You mentioned, of course, Kenny Gamble, but other artists who wanted to see this happen.
Oh, there was Stevie Wonder. There was Kenny. In the beginning, there was Berry Gordy, Stevie Wonder. Everybody was on board.
Ask you, how about James Brown? Because say it loud, I'm black and proud. It's, you know, did he take an interest?
Well, James was had gone to Africa way back. You know, the problem with James was a green power man, but James was, for lack of a better word, he had a double consciousness, because, you know, sometimes he was red, white, and blue, then he would get red, black, and green, you know.
and it's, now you've identified, you mentioned Kenny Gamble. Who were some of the other leaders? I mean, those who really were, you know, made it their project. Who was working on this? By the way, you must include yourself, right?
Oh, myself and Kenny, and we had a chapter in Toronto. Milton, the late Milton Blake, was a part of that.
Milton Blake, yes.
Milton Blake, Diane Liverpool. We had a guy by the name of Wayne Lawson, Daryl Owyhee. Salome Bay was a member.
Mm-hmm.
The first project we did a tribute to Bob Marley. Then we did a tribute to Sam Cooke.
Mm-hmm.
The tribute to Sam Cooke was we brought in Sam Cooke's brother L.C. Cooke flew in from Chicago. We also had Alan Klein's son, Alan Klein. No matter what you think about him, he was the man who managed Sam. He managed the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and he is a very controversial figure, Mr. When his son came in with his the woman that he basically married,
uh-huh.
And yeah, we had quite an assembly of people,
mm-hmm.
And there were chapters all over the United States.
Mm-hmm. Was this before Prince became involved in these things? Was he too young? Was this before his time when this was initiated?
Prince was a strange man. When I say a strange man, he claimed to be, well, he was a Seventh-day Adventist Jehovah's Witness, but Prince was, if you listen to Prince, you might think you were talking to a Huey P. Newton.
Mm-hmm.
Prince was well aware of Africa and social justice. I mean, he talked about being, you know, a Jehovah's Witness. But like I say, if you listen and the stuff that he didn't talk about, like he paid when Lauryn Hill was in prison for a tax evasion or whatever they got of the Lauryn Hill. He looked after the family while all the time she was in prison. He did stuff. He did things like that,
yeah.
And he financed. He helped finance the Malcolm X film. He gave Spike Lee money to complete that. He was one of the people that helped complete the Malcolm X film.
That's doing something. That was a great film. That was, it's a film which it's a. carved out of history, and so there's different points of view, but it really is a very edifying film. You learn a lot watching that movie. I wonder if he had any input. Did he know what they were going to do with that film, or he just knew it was going to be something good?
I have no idea. All I saw Prince twice. And I was on the verge of making contact with him. His office had contacted me because all of Prince's grandparents were born in Louisiana, and one of his grandfathers was born in Arcadia, Louisiana, where I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And many people in my family claim that we are related to Prince, but I can't prove that. And
I'd be looking into that. I'd personally go down there and see if I could find a connection to Prince. But by the way, you touched on something, and I know this is an area of partisanship for you, that Louisiana is a source of a lot of, I mean, people say, well, black music and or this kind of, but you trace it back, and Louisiana seems to be home base for a lot of the great music.
The South Louisiana it was sort of like a melting pot. You had the blues. It was a port town, so you had, you know, people coming in from Haiti and people coming in from many other parts of the world. So it was a spot that was a mix-up. Like, for example, I was talking to my nephew the other day, and he's sort of like he traces a lot of things like that, and he says that my grandmother, his great-grandmother's name is Olamé Pruitt, and she, Olamé, that's a Yoruba name.
Mm-hmm.
And he is arguing, not arguing, but was basically telling me that part of our ancestry is Yoruba. You know, we can basically prove that through, through the whole DNA thing. But yeah, Garvey's movement his biggest following was in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And his second biggest following was in Mississippi. The myth is always been that New York,
mm-hmm,
that the Africans in America, the Northern Africans, mm-hmm, didn't support Garvey. They weren't nationalistic. The Africans in the North wanted to be Americans. You know, like that's C.L.R. James. That's his argument that mm-hmm, you know, black people in America, unlike the West Indians and the Africans, we wanted to be Americans. But he was in a debate with Leon Trotsky, and Trotsky raised the question and says, if these black people in America didn't want to be, they didn't have any interest in being self-determined, why were so many of them following Marcus Garvey? And of course, Mr. James couldn't answer that.
Yeah. Yeah. Marcus Garvey is a big presence. There's no question that he really captured people's imagination, and he really could lay out a case. We're speaking to Norman Otis Richmond, bluesologist, and of course you made an effort here in Toronto, and we're making some headway with this thing of a recognition of Black Music Month, right?
Well, I well, they have recognized black music, but the mayor, Olivia Chow, did make a proclamation, but she didn't make it public.
Oh, wait a minute. Just, school isn't out. If she made a proclamation, that's in the hands of the people who take and do with it what they like, right? It was if it's a proclamation, that means it crossed, it went out the door, right? It is actually is in a public matter.
Yeah, but it's up to us. Phil Vassell, I think, was the person that that requested it. Mm-hmm. But I think, and I hope I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, I'll definitely correct myself. But she essentially basically told him that it's on him to, promote it.
Well, let's.
And I know I'm
well,
going
why
to.
Why don't
get
we
it.
Get this done? I'm all for it. Let's. Next, when it comes around, I mean, obviously, it's late to get it done now, but next June, why don't they have a City Hall concert? Why not?
I shouldn't make it public, but you're very close to what's happening.
Mm-hmm. You think that it's possible to do it, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. No, I mean, people say, of course. I mean, particularly, we have so many great black musicians here, and they're part of this whole issue. And from here to Louisiana, and if it wouldn't be any problem getting the talent at City Hall and do it right. It is embarrassing. Here we have a country music month and we don't have black, one is actually music and the other is singing along. And, also, my goodness, one of the reasons, by the way, we're talking about black music is the Klan worked its tail off trying to prevent it. You remember when there were people doing crossover and the Klan said, "Hey, listen, you're not fooling us. That's black music." And they began to break the records and say,
"Oh, yeah.
We're never going to play anything. If these people are going to cross over, that means integration. We have to." And they put their bodies on the line to try to kill a culture.
I think the problem was that since, 1829, I might have my dates wrong, but black music has basically swept the world since that time. You had the Tuskegee a choir from Tuskegee who went to Europe in 1834, I think 1838. Langston Hughes talks about that in one of his books,
mm-hmm.
And this was a time when blacks from the South went to Scotland, Ireland, England, all over Europe. Western Europe, and basically knocked the socks off of everybody. And of course, after that, you had the jazz folks, Duke Ellington, Count Basie. Then you had the bebop thing. Then you had Calypso, with Harry Belafonte. So the first million selling record was a Calypso mm-hmm. by a Calypso album by Harry Belafonte. So it's
Yes. What's interesting there, Norman, is that they could, this way that the Americans could rationalize what they actually were, which was a legally segregated society, but they really wanted that music. So that if they could find somebody who was not from the United States originally and make it into, this is from somewhere else, right? It made it more digestible for them, right?
Oh yeah, but they also use our jazz musicians to promote anti-communism as well.
Well, had to do that if you wanted to be employed, right? Yeah, so they were always sending. Remember when they sent they were going to make nice with the Russians, so they send black musicians to Russia as though those black musicians had same legal rights as white Americans, which they did not have. But they used them to say to Russia, "See, here you are. We got Mr. Armstrong here."
Well, Louis, Mr. Armstrong made it. He complained, and he made. I think it was Nixon. Nixon. He made Nixon give him a diplomatic immunity, which meant he could take anything across the border without being searched because, you know, he smoked a little bit. And contrary to popular belief, Satchmo was not. I interviewed people that work with him, and they basically said that Satchmo smoked. He wasn't like a Peter Tosh or, you know, he wasn't a Peter Tosh where he smoked all the time. They say he smoked Saturday, you know, after the last performance on Saturday night, you know, they would relax. But, yeah. You know, Satchmo wrote two books, and he was an archivist. He was, you know, he has this image of being this Uncle Tom, but that's
just
not
baloney.
It wasn't necessarily so.
No, he knew how to take, he looked after, he knew that a lot of hypocrites who would play games with him. He was, my understanding is, a very tough individual.
And he was.
And his, if you look, his life story, you remember when New Orleans tried to readopt him after treating him badly?
Yes.
And he says, no, I'm not going to New Orleans. you guys are going to have to beg. And they said, okay, we're begging. somebody said that Hillary Clinton, when you talked about as being an archivist, the senator Hillary Clinton visited his archives when they first opened, and they said, "Did they play any of the recordings?" And they said, "No, she couldn't. He would turn the air blue if she listened, and the public heard him talking. It would be the real Louis Armstrong." And they said too strong a medicine, which is. Boy, there's a man who ought to be studied, people, in depth. There have been good biographies, but everything you said about him just points a needle because he's central to all the development of African music, right?
Oh, yeah. Winton Marcellus will tell you that.
Well, Norman, it's been great talking to you, and the project now is going to have a Black History Month, and we're going to have a big show at City Hall, right?
It looks that way. Yeah. It looks that way. Yes, sir.
Well, you're the guy that can get it done. Norman Otis Richmond, thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye. This is the Taylor Report. I think we have maybe half a minute, do we? You can still contribute to the station, by the way. Get busy, CIUT.FM, donate. And we don't care if you double the amount. We got 100,000 or so. We wouldn't mind another. At CIUT.FM, donate, and do mention the Taylor Report. And 33-45-78, Steve Fruitman is going to be coming up after Edith Piaf.